Unity of Walnut Creek is the first metaphysical church I ever went to 31 years ago. The stage used to be there. My first day here, my heart just burst open, and I was sitting right about here. Isn't that a trip? It's a trip, yeah. Wonderful to be back. So, yeah. Love is the only truth, yes? And the only truth is love, and sometimes it's harder to get there than others, right? Do you know what I'm saying, right? Finding that truth for ourselves, finding the truth for other people. So that's what we want to talk today about today we want to talk. How to get there, how to get to the love, where is the love, especially when you're feeling disconnected from it. Love for yourself, love for other people. And Melissa is going to get us started. Melissa?
Thank you, baby. So, any of y'all ever been triggered? Just me and you. Oh, there's a couple more, okay. So I define triggered as, if there was the eagle's eye view observer looking down, someone was seeing me respond to a set of circumstances, my response is perhaps illogical. That's what I call being triggered, right? So I used to live there. I mean, everything triggered me. Okay, so still to this day, little things like I can be driving down the freeway and someone cuts in front of me and slows down. Right? Like, why did you get in front of me if you're going to... Okay. And then I go to the store and I'm in the 15-item speedy checkout aisle. And the person in front of me has 19 items in their basket. And I start going, what? You're counting all the vegetables as one category? I go to my car sometimes, still thinking about the person in front of me in the, triggered. So I used to live there, and I mean, trigger happy. Everything triggered me except for not happy. Everything triggered me into anger and judgment and shame. That was pretty much it. Bounce around between those. Very fun. Good times. Yeah. So I have a summary now. After my many years of studying, meditating, I'm 33 and almost at the end of this month, it'll be 34 years clean and sober. Yay! I definitely would not be here. Okay. So anyway, and then, you know, I'm a minister in Centers for Spiritual Living, and I'm Toltec person, and all these different things I've done, right? Many years of practice and study and reading and all those things. And I've summarized it with this. If we are feeling toxic bad, keyword toxic, if we are feeling toxic bad, we are believing a lie. That means you're telling yourself a lie and you're believing it. That's a two-step process. Good news, because you can stop it before the second one necessarily happens. So now I do want to say a little separate shout out to grief. I feel like I always have to set grief in its own, because grief is its own little blessed little island, and it will have its way with us. Whether we want it to or not, whether we're ready, whatever, it will show up. And it's also very weird grief. It's illogical and random. It does weird stuff. Like you think you're fine after a while, and then all of a sudden, wham! Grief is just its own little island, right? So I'm putting that over to the side. But I do say that if we allow grief, if we really allow it, even that, it's not toxic. Even if we won't necessarily want a bunch more, it's not toxic, and it can be beautiful. But I'm going back to the toxic lie. If we are feeling toxic bad, we are believing a lie, right? Okay. So how do you figure out, how do you get out of believing the lie and being in that toxic place? So you look for the lie, You have to figure out first, what is the lie I'm telling myself and believing? And then, if you want to find the truth, and you're not sure where it is, you look on the flip side of the lie. And it's right there. So, quite a few years ago, I wasn't even with Z yet. I was touring doing music. I used to come here when that description that you gave, I used to come here and just do music. And so I was touring around doing music. And now, at this time, I was already a practitioner, which is a lot of years of training. And I was working in the Toltec world, trained as a Toltec mentor. I mean, I knew the truth. And I went away on this trip, 10 days, came back, stack of notices from my bank. Remember notices in the mail from the bank? There was a whole stack of them. That alone was not a good moment, seeing the stack of notices, right? So what I discovered with some research was that before I left, when I was home briefly in between trips, I had entered a deposit twice in my bookkeeping. Yeah, I didn't put it in the bank twice. That'd be good. I entered it in my records twice. And then because in those days, my life was a big toxic mess, I had a lot of debt and I paid down a debt. That felt so good. Until I got home to the notices. $600 in fees. Wow. $600 in fees. And back then, I blamed the bank for not reversing the charges, even though it's totally my mistake. Anyway, we won't go there. But that's part of the toxic thing, right, that I lived in. So what I did was I have all this wisdom and knowledge, but I found myself in this place of shame and judgment, feeling just toxic bad for weeks. I could not make it stop. I could make it stop for like a millisecond. I go, I see the truth. Oh, right in the shame. So for me, money can be a trigger like that. Even still, way less or so, but money, man, when I feel like I don't have my money stuff together or something comes up that makes me feel like lesser than or something with money, I do what my friend and I call going down the spiral staircase. If you can imagine just hopping onto the railing and sliding on down into shame. That's one of those kind of triggers for me. So after weeks of this struggling, suffering to get out of this lie that I was believing, I finally said to my then husband, I'm going to go do this meditation. I'll be like 10 minutes. It's going to be quick. I just got to fix this. Well, it was about an hour. And I came out of the room. He was a physician and he looked at me. He went like, she's in shock. And he said, what happened? And I said, I just realized my mom hates me. And he said, that's news to you? Which is actually exactly what my best friend said to me a week later when I said it to her. I realized my mother, like, always hated me. She goes, that's news to you? Just think about the things that she says to you sometimes and not to your siblings and like this. There's all this evidence, right? So the thing is, when I was growing up, my mother, bless her little heart, used to say to me all the time, you were the best fight I ever lost with your father. See, I'm always amazed when y'all like get it right away. Because it took me 50 years to figure out that hurt my feelings. It didn't feel very good. Because what I decided, this is what I realized in the meditation. What I decided from her saying that and her being mean to me, because really she didn't not want me. She didn't know who I was going to be, this awesome person. She ended up liking me later. But she didn't know that. She knew she didn't want another baby. She had been there and done that. She was done with that stuff. And my dad was not. So in this meditation, I came to realize how I felt by her saying that and the ways that she would act out when she was upset that I existed in those moments. I came to believe that I should not exist. I was a mistake. I should not have come. I was not wanted. That was news to me. I didn't know my life, my consciousness was built on top of that. And then I was like, well, then, okay, so if we're checking the flip side to find the truth, and the truth wouldn't be, I'm assuming, the spiritual truth is not that I'm not worthy and I shouldn't exist. I'm thinking there's something a little more seemingly spiritual. What would that be? And what I heard immediately was, Spirit wanted me here. My dad wanted me here, but Spirit wanted me here. And Spirit wanted me here through all my years of using, keeping me alive. I should not be here. I got stories. I'm not going to be telling them this morning. Spirit wanted me here, and Spirit wants me here still. This is the truth for you, y'all. Every breath you take is the evidence. Every blessed breath you take is the evidence. Y'all know we all have lost people. Y'all know you're gonna have a last breath, and it hasn't come yet, and let's hope it's not this morning. Which means, because y'all are breathing, there is evidence. You are wanted. You are wanted. You are loved. You are worthy. It is good. Okay, so I actually realized that in that day, in that meditation. That's why I was in shock. Like, whoa, my whole life was built on this lie that I had to prove myself worthy of existing, and I didn't need to. So my life, like, recreated itself. It completely changed. It's way better now. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't horrible then, but it got better. So I'm not saying that, like, I don't ever have shame anymore and I don't go down the spiral staircase. I'm not saying that. I am saying that I don't go there as often, and I catch myself more often. I catch the lie before I believe it. I hear it and I go, liar, liar, pants on fire. So one of my favorite mantras that I love to use a lot is, I stand in unapologetic confidence, knowing the truth of my divine nature. I stand in unapologetic confidence, knowing the truth of my divine nature. And when I hear a lie that my brain wants to grab onto, oh, it's so juicy, that'd be so good if I believe that I suck again, I do this. Remember the Verizon guy? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? And I say to myself, can I love me now? Can I love me now? I ask that question, and I turn to Spirit until I get a yes, a heck yes. And more, because of that, I am trigger happy. Like, my life, I have to say, my life is like a magical thing. It's magical goodness. It is amazingly awesome. And a lot of things in life still trigger me, but they trigger joy and gratitude. because I'm seeing the truth. Love is the only truth. It's really there everywhere when we look with those eyes, right? So more and more, I really am trigger happy. And now, to give you one of my favorite triggers of happiness, I introduce you to my wifebind. I say wifebind. My spouse person, Reverend Baby, Reverend Z.
Thank you, Melissa. All right. So Melissa talked about finding love for ourselves. Find the lie, check on the flip side. I would like to advance it a little bit and now add other people to the mix. Okay. And to do so, I would like to share a story with you that I fondly call the spiritual retreat from hell. Would you like to hear it? Okay. So this was about 15 years ago. Melissa and I went to a spiritual retreat. These days we often facilitate them, but in this case we were attending a retreat. I didn't know anyone there except Melissa. So I was feeling kind of, you know, shy. How's this going to go? We were all at a hotel together, and we met in a conference room the first night. I go to the first event, and, you know, it seemed to be going okay. Now, I should mention, this was a women's retreat. I was born in the body of a little girl, but the girl category has never quite fit. But neither does the boy category. So these days they call folks like me gender, they call us non-binary. I prefer the term gender rich, whole lot of gender going on. Melissa came up with that, I like to say, because people, I've never heard of that. Well, yeah, Melissa came up with it to describe me. So it's like, are you a boy or a girl? Yes. Or do I look like I know? Yeah, so there we go. So I'm good now. Like, I am good with myself now. But this was 15 years ago where I was still kind of finding myself and finding acceptance for myself, right? I wasn't where I am now. And so I was nervous, right? Because I have had and still have sometimes if, like, I try to go in a woman's bathroom, women scream, and not in a good way, right? I bring Melissa with me to show that I'm pre-approved and, like, you know, smile and stuff, but yeah, it's not always good. So, but it seemed to be going okay. This first night, it's like, okay, no one's freaking out. I think we're good. We go back to our room, Melissa and I, to go to sleep. Melissa conks right out because that's how she is, and I take a while to kind of come down. So I'm lying there in the dark, and I'm realizing, you know, the walls are kind of thin between the rooms, and so I can hear two voices in the next room talking. And I'm realizing as I'm hearing them talk, as I can hear what they're saying, that they're from the retreat, these two women's voices from the retreat. And then I realize they're talking about me. Yeah. One voice in particular is saying things like, I don't know why she has to look like that. These days I'm they, them pronouns, but then I was still she. So I don't know why she has to look like that. And I don't understand why, if she hates men, she has to look like one. Okay. You think of things later, I should have shouted out, like, I don't hate men, I'm part guy myself, right? But no, I didn't think of that. We all know that people talk about us, right? We all know people talk about us, but to actually hear it is quite a different thing. It was like being kicked in the gut a little bit. And I was a good metaphysician then, and so I knew. I went to this retreat nervous about what some of the other participants were going to think of me. And here I was, attracting an experience of finding out exactly what one participant thought, right? Yeah. Now, as a good metaphysician, I also knew that asking the question, how did my consciousness create this, is not always really the most empowering or helpful thought. It's much more empowering to ask, how can my consciousness heal this, right? So And we all know, right? We've had things that happen that seem to be the worst thing ever, and it's the best thing that ever happened, right? So I'm trying to, like, hold on to that. And did I? Well, the next morning, I go to the morning event, and I am scanning the room, trying to figure out that voice that is seared in my brain, right? And there were actually two women in the room who had that voice, which was a little bit of a problem because I didn't know which one to hate. Did I mention that this was a spiritual retreat? Yeah. Oh, yes, it was. Yes, it was. So it wasn't long before I figured out exactly who she was because they were in the room right next to us. So at some point, we have a break in the festivities, and we go back to the room, and there she is, one of the two women, indeed. And so I was able to say to her, like, just so you know, the walls are really thin, and we can hear everything you're saying. I tried to, like, do a little extra. Yeah. Interestingly enough, though, it did not bring me the satisfaction that I thought it would. And now that I saw who she was, I was able to find out some more things about her. Like, she was a few decades older than me. So back when she was coming up, there were not a lot of gender-rich individuals roaming free about the land. Also, she grew up in a conservative religious household. Also, not a lot of this. And I kept thinking, because I couldn't stop thinking, about what she'd said. And everything she had said had started with the phrase, "I don't understand why." In other words, she was saying, "I don't understand," right? So because this was actually a spiritual retreat, at one point we did some kind of, I don't even remember what it was now, but some kind of process that took us within, tapping into the infinite divine love that we are. And so I'm in this space of remembering the truth, and in that place I'm thinking about my little neighbor friend, and I'm thinking, you know, it doesn't feel good to judge someone. It doesn't feel good to be contracted about someone else, right? Like, we all want to love. Everybody wants to love. That's why all the songs on the radio are about love. Like if she could get to a place where she had a choice, she wants to love me, right? The lie was she wants to judge me. The truth on the flip side is she wants to love me. And it became like a mantra, like I couldn't stop saying it. Like, she wants to love me. She wants to love me. And from that place, I was able to easily forgive her. Not like, oh, I forgive you because you suck. But like, I actually like was in a space of forgiveness. And also, I didn't have to go and process it with her, right? It was just an inside job. And the mantra just was a gift that kept given because I was also thinking, you know, I was judging her for judging me, which made me double judgy, which sounds like a particularly bitter flavor of ice cream, right? Two scoops of double judgy, please, like, yum, right? So I was judging her, so I want to love her. She wants to love me. I want to love her. And then, not only that, if I heard that now, if I had that experience now, 15 years later, it would maybe sting a little, but not like it would now. Like, it would just be like, oh yeah, okay, here's someone who doesn't get it, right? It wouldn't be what it was then, but because I had all this stuff in me that unearthed, like I had a toxic response to it, right? Because I still had to learn to love and accept myself. And because of that experience is a big part of why today I am the gender-rich freak nerd that I am and totally good with it, right? Because of that experience. And it is no accident that I got there in spiritual practice, right? Because when we do our spiritual practice, whatever that is, we go to that space where we know that we are love. And in that space of love, those lies, they stand out, right? You can see them easier when you tap into that space of love, and you can check on the flip side more easily. And here's a little like hint, spoiler alert, love is always on the flip side. love is always on the flip side. There's a story I love about a woman who goes to the doctor and she says, "Doctor, I hurt all over. And the doctor says, "Well, can you be a little more specific?" And she says, "Yeah, let me show you. So my head right there, ow, ooh, ah, ee, and my elbow right, ah, right there, ah, and my thigh, ah, right there, ooh." And the doctor says, "I think I see what's going on." Doctor examines her and says, "You have a broken finger." So when you look at life through a fractured lens, everything hurts, right? You're in the lie. But when, through your spiritual practice, you find that love, you see the truth. The truth about yourself, you find the lies, you check on the flip side, the truth about others. They want to love you. And you want to love them. And you want to love you. So from that place of doing our work, doing our spiritual stuff, coming to places like this, meditation, prayer, talking with a chaplain or a practitioner or a friend, we find the truth. Love is the only truth. And the only truth is love. Say it with me. Love is the only truth, and the only truth is love, and so it is. Thank you. All right, normally we do an affirmation after our talk, but today, because it's 4th of July, we're gonna do like a fireworks of affirmations with you, and Melissa is going to lead it. Are you ready? Okay.
Repeat after me. Thank you, Don.
I see you.
That's very good. Every breath I take.
Every breath I take
is evidence that Spirit wants me.
Is evidence that Spirit wants me.
I am enough.
I am enough.
If I forget this truth,
if I forget this truth,
I look for the lie.
I look for the lie.
I check the flip side.
I check the flip side
to find the truth.
To find the truth.
I am loved.
I am loved.
I love others.
I love others.
And others love me.
And others love me.
Even if they don't know it yet.
Even if they don't know it yet.
They want to love me.
They want to love me.
I want to love them.
I want to love them.
I stand.
I stand.
Unapologetically confident.
Unapologetically confident.
Knowing the truth of my divine nature.
Knowing the truth of my divine nature.
I stand.
I stand.
Unapologetically confident.
Unapologetically confident.
Knowing the truth of my divine nature.
Knowing the truth of my divine nature.
Because I rock.
Because I rock.
And you rock.
And you rock.
We all rock.
We all rock.
Because Spirit rocks.
Because Spirit rocks.
And so it is.
And so it is.